Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Good evening and welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach on a kind of cool night here in Jacksonville. It's kind of enjoyable. It feels like football weather here in North Florida.
It does. You know what? It was a little cool out at practice today, but you know, it gets them going even more when it's a little cooler temperatures, Log.
The last week, Vikings game. Let's take a look back at that a little bit. And before we look ahead to the Houston Texans, probably the best part of that game was we talked about it leading up to it, that the Vikings had been one of the best teams in the National Football League about taking the ball away. And amazingly, with the record that they were still like number 2 in the National Football League in turnover differential. But yet you guys did not turn the ball over against the Vikings on offense.
Well, a heavy emphasis. It's been a heavy emphasis. But just the decision-making we made, they were going for it, too. I had multiple opportunities. I thought our guys did a really good job as far as the number of rushing attempts we had, double in trouble, you know, really protecting the ball. And then Blake made, obviously, some very good decisions as well.
Double in trouble.
Both hands
on the ball if you start to get in trouble.
That's right. You know, so many times the fumbles occur on the way down. So that was just a special emphasis for us.
For you guys, third quarter got exciting. You guys ended up taking, I believe it was 11-play, 90-yard drive that Brian Walters caught, the 14-yard touchdown pass. I think it was Blake Bortles' best throw of the game. And that was a situation where you start to drive all the way to 10. I mean, that's where you go, 90 yards. I mean, it was impressive. And you take the lead at the end of the third quarter, and you take that lead 16-12, and then it was take your pick, special teams, defense, offense, had opportunities. That was probably the disappointing thing, is that you had your opportunity, and it was right there, and here's a chance to keep that momentum going, and you weren't able to do it.
Well, we've had a lot of close games going into the year, so and you know, when you take a look at it, the number of close games that you have and what you got to do to finish those games, and we had those opportunities that took place in that fourth quarter. Special teams had a couple errors offensively, 2-3 and outs in the series that we had. And then defensively, we didn't get the ball back to the offense like we wanted to. So, I mean, shared responsibility in this one. But that's got to be the big emphasis this week is, hey, we're playing well in those three quarters. We're keeping the games in these one-possession games, but we got to learn to finish.
Yeah, the special teams, I think it was after you guys took the lead, you had the delay of game on the kickoff, the deflected punt, roughing punter, the illegal touch. And then the punt after the illegal touch, it was kind of – wasn't a great punt by Brad Nortman, didn't really gain a whole lot of yards. And then, I mean, that's tough to take. I mean, special teams, I mean, you know, we not a lot of broadcasters want to talk about special teams. It doesn't have a lot of appeal. But, man, it's such a big part of the game, field position battle, you know, for both sides, both teams. I mean, that's where you can win and lose.
It is, you know, and that's why turnovers are so important and taking care of the ball, because it affects field position. You don't want to ever give the opposing team a short field to operate in. And special teams can have the same effect. When you have a short punt, when you get a blocked punt, you know, a long return, things like that can shorten that field position if they don't score. I mean, they, you know, it still shortens it to give the offense a great advantage as far as scoring opportunities.
I know early in the week you talked about the delay of game on the kickoff, and I've never witnessed one. I know that there were two last year, I believe, in the National Football League. And I couldn't figure out if because Jonathan Cyprian was trying to change sides, was he getting on the field late? Was it a matter of you wanted to get the proper alignment for the type of kick that you had? I couldn't figure out why that there was a delay of game.
Right. Well, you know, just like kickoff or other teams, other special teams, you have a scheme that you set up, and based on the kick, where you want to go, deep left, deep right, you want to squib it. You know, so there's a variety of options. Now, most of the time, you just see the kicker kick it through the end zone, and that's it. But in this case, we had a style of kickoff that we wanted, and then with some personnel changes that they had and what we saw on the field, we went to a different style. And with that, we had to switch personnel. Jonathan Cyprian had to move to the other side. Regis Benn had to move around his alignment. So after we saw the shift in alignments, you know, we decided to make this and decided to go for a squib kick. And we just didn't get it set up in time. And, You know, we end up getting a delay of game. You're right. It's a critical error. I mean, 5 yards, and then you have a kick returner like they have. Mm-hmm. So it's important that you don't give him an opportunity to return the ball because of his skill set. And we chose the squib, and the squib wasn't as effective as we wanted.
Yeah, Cordarrelle Patterson, he had that 53-yarder earlier in the ball game. He's a great player.
He's dynamic, and, you know, he's done that to other teams. He has the ability to return one for touchdowns. Great kickoff returner. Not just good, a great returner. And we had a lot of respect for him.
Well, and you talk about a shared responsibility. The drive after you guys took the lead, the Vikings ended up going down the field, a 9-play, 62-yard drive. They got great field position from the delay. That was at the 38-yard line. And, last week going into that game, you know, a lot of talk about how well you played defensively against Denver. And you came out and you said it. Look, if we want to take the next step as a defense, you know, what we need to do is kind of what Denver had done, and that's dictate the tempo of a game, dictate moments in a game. And you had your opportunities there, two drives that the Vikings had, and defensively weren't able to do that.
Right. Well, and, you know, to do that's a work in progress. It's not, okay, this week let's start determining the outcome of the game. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that you really work at. You instill a mindset to your players, and when those opportunities come up, you have to take advantage of it. Great lesson for our guys. Hey, this is what we're talking about. When you have a chance to determine the outcome, when you have the lead, fourth quarter, you got to come through. And whether it's a sack caused fumble, a strip and a play, or a three and out, or a stop on third down, there's multiple ways you can do it. But we have to get the ball back to our offense so they can, you know, run out the clock.
And offensively, a couple opportunities. You had the two drives, three and outs. And because it was such a shared responsibility with special teams having a chance, defense having a chance, offense having a chance, I think that this was probably – I don't want to know if it was the first or the second most quiet locker room after the game, you know, because I've come in there to interview you after the game. And I was trying to figure out, was it the Packers game or was it this game that was more quiet because of the disappointment? And I would probably say that it was this game for a couple different reasons. Number one being that, you know, look, all three phases felt responsible. And then I think number two is just, you know, the game after game where you haven't gotten a victory to celebrate, to make that feeling kind of go away, kind of compounds a little bit.
Right. And I don't know. I mean, you walk in the locker room, and I don't know if you can determine the mood of the team just based by if it's quiet, if they're talking. I know they all hurt. You know, when you go into a locker room after a game, everybody expresses their emotions differently. But no one's happy. No one's pleased about what took place. And that game is no different. When you have an opportunity in the fourth quarter like we did, and that's really all you hope for as a defense. Just give us a lead. Just give us a lead, and we'll take it from here. And, we just didn't get it done. We had opportunities. I thought some missed tackling showed up in some of those drives. And when you get them to third down situations, you got to make open field tackles as well.
Yeah, the Telvin Smith, who has been just phenomenal. When you talk about missed tackles, he had some opportunities. And a lot of people say, well, why do missed tackles happen? People are like, well, they don't wrap up. Well, it's not necessarily wrapping up. A lot of times, especially against a guy like McKinnon, the running back. I mean, he's a put foot in the ground and then go the other way 90 degrees and do it with speed. The missed tackles sometimes are a result of, well, the angle needs to be a little bit better on the approach.
Well, you know, backs have different ways to set up defenders. A couple of them, you know, Telvin saw a key, cheated over to try to, you know, affect the coverage a little bit or give a bad look for the quarterback. He came back, and you have a lot of space to operate in. Telvin's been making plays in space all year long. The back made some plays, and he's a great player too. He's an NFL caliber player, so he's going to get his opportunities, and he made a couple good moves in space and made some yards off of it. But, that's going to happen in some games. It's just when it's a close game, you hope that on your side you come out ahead.
Yeah, on the offensive side of the ball, Marquise Lee, wow. Actually showed him a television show Monday night. And before we get to the catches, the play in which it was Ben Koyak caught the ball in the flat and Marquise, because, you know, I've always thought that the measure of a true competitor, if you want to find a high-level competitor, watch what they do when they don't have the ball. And one of the greatest all-time competitors in Jaguars history, who I always thought was Maurice Jones-Drew, when there was a turnover, he was like an absolute missile going after the whoever got the interception or picked up the fumble. I mean, he was going to lay the wood on somebody. And the way that Marquise acted on that play to where he swung back and got the block, and it was a defensive end, I think it was Daniil Hunter, who's a 260-pound guy, that and plays like that impressed me.
Yeah, you know what? He was I know exactly when. It was right to our sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And he did set it up. It was a critical third down. We threw it below the sticks, and Ben caught it, and Marquise set it up and did a good job coming back. Good clean hit, got his head in front, and allowed us to get the first down. But it's always the more that you can do. It's not just the catches you make. It's not the runs after the catches. It's everything that you do. And he's been doing that all year now. We asked him to do some blocks inside the core. He's been doing that. This one happened to be outside the core and allowed for a third down conversion. So he's playing at a high level right now for us.
Well, and you talk about a block inside the core and outside the core. This really wasn't – I mean, that's not on his job description on that play. He's running a route, right?
Well,
I mean,
that's right. He's running a route, and then he came back. And, you know, it's about the strain. You want your offensive line to strain. You want your receivers and tight ends to strain. And just because there's a catch underneath the sticks, let's continue that strain. Because that little extra effort allows for a first down, allows for us to keep the sticks moving, and the offense to stay on the field.
Well, Marquise had what I thought was tremendous catches a couple weeks ago, where he just showed great body control. And then the one on the boundary on your sideline to where he goes back, catches the ball, strong hands, keeps it away from his body, away from the defender. You know, and as an NFL player, college rules 1 foot inbounds. NFL's got to have two. He got four. 4 feet inbounds.
Right. Well, and, you know, and that's what we're seeing in practice from really all of our receivers. They go up there. It's highly competitive in practice. And then to actually see it on the game field, for the fans to see it, for you to see it, I mean, it's remarkable. And he does. He shows that type of body ability to really direct his body and make big plays. And whether it is to keep his feet inbounds or keep the ball away from his body and away from the defender, excuse me, he's been doing that.
Well, and he's getting some opportunities of watching that game. The Vikings, they played safety over the top a little bit of Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson got limited. Now he had one catch for 17 yards. Is Marquise, is he the beneficiary of some of that coverage that's going towards A-Rob, or is this Marquise just doing it his own thing?
Well, I think with A-Rob, you're seeing that some of the coverages, it feels like they're double covering him. Other times when you watch the tape, they have great awareness. You know, if there's a buzz defender, he is buzzing right to Allen Robinson now. So they have great awareness where he is. And when you have that, it creates openings for other players, and that's where they got to take advantage of it. But at times, Marquise Lee's seeing some of the same coverages too, and that's where you got to get the ball to other receivers.
Saw that a couple times.
Right.
The safety cheating over there towards Marquise, and you could see the safety taking a look pre-snap. I'm going, hey, teams are starting to recognize his talent.
Right, and if you get two guys like that, you know, that are starting to command that type of attention, it just opens up the game more. And then it helps the run game, it helps with the tight ends, and just gives more opportunities for everybody to get involved.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we want to talk about Tyler Shatley. Ended up playing, starting at center for the injured Brandon Linder, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show right after this on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show here with the head coach, Gus. And we were, before the break there, mentioned Tyler Shatley, who had to play for the injured Brandon Linder, had an ankle, wasn't able to make a go of it. You know, against a really good football player, Linval Joseph, not many defensive tackles have the power, the size, and the length that Linval Joseph has. I thought Shatley did a pretty good job.
He did do a good job. You know, to come in, the one thing that Tyler Shatley's all about, obviously he's smart and he understands the offense, but his strength. He's very strong individual. So when you get those big body type guys like a Joseph or like this week, a Wolfork, you know, that's where his strength has got to come through for him. But he's moving good, he's protecting. So it was a good game for him overall.
Guys are saying that he's the strongest guy in the weight room.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. I don't know who's next or who's in the competition, but I know if he's not the strongest, he's one of the strongest.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, you know, when you talk about weight room strength, most of the guys, the first thing they want to talk about is bench press. What do you bench press? I don't know how many times I got that question in my playing career. And, of course, I was never a big bench presser. I heard you were.
Well, you got great length.
I had length, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was your excuse,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I couldn't bench press a whole lot. Yeah. That's why at the combine, that's why I think I did on like 14, 15 reps at 225. It was all because of the length.
JP, look that up. Well, yeah, I mean, it might be 10.
No. I think I got 14, 15. I mean, if I was wanting to lie, I'd probably go 20.
Yeah.
You've been big bench press guy back
in
the day, North Dakota State?
Yeah, but we didn't do multiple reps. We just did one rep.
Okay. What's your max?
It was 340.
That's pretty good.
So, yeah, it was okay.
That's pretty good for North Dakota State.
Yeah. Are you going to look that one up?
All right, let's get back on track. Offensively, I thought the one guy that's been battling a little bit with an ankle injury, I thought he did really good, and that was T.J. Yeldon. And – you know, when guys get nicked up, which, you know what, everybody in the National Football League this time of year is nicked up. You know, whether they're on the injury report or not, guys are nicked up. And he obviously had major discomfort the week before. This week he comes back. You can't really tell. I think the one tackle that he got over there on the Vikings sideline, he was a little slow getting up. It was an ankle tackle. And but what he was able to contribute, he ended up having 17 carries, 59 yards rushing, and he added 31 yards receiving. That's a pretty good job.
Yeah, really good. You know what? You're right about TJ. And you could say that about a number of guys on our team and in the NFL. But very accurate with him. I think he was at 75% and then 80. He's hovering around right there. But just he knows we're a little thin at that running back spot now. And for him to go in there and get the number of carries and what we put on his shoulders, he did an outstanding job. Outstanding job.
Defense. Vikings came out, and they weren't afraid to take a shot. Sam Bradford was able to get some explosive plays on you guys. And kind of a – I don't want to say it was unexpected because they did that against the Cowboys. They took some shots. But it may be a little bit different than what they have done the weeks prior because it had been really kind of a controlled passing attack. Bradford's a capable quarterback. They took some shots. And I think that I think all of their drives early on, even in one you would consider the kick return by Patterson, but each one of them had an explosive play that led to points, not necessarily touchdowns,
right,
but field goals.
Right. And, you know, if you look at the very first series, the first play, they had a long gain, you know, explosive pass. And it wasn't scheme. It wasn't, hey, they really attacked our coverage. You know, the quarterback went back, and he had a long time to
throw
the ball.
Too much time.
Way too much time. And then it was a plaster rule where they ran their route. It wasn't open. And then he took off, and we got to just plaster a little bit better. And then the other one, the next series, the first play of that series, we brought a pressure, and they threw a fade route, you know, down the sideline, a go route. And
that was a nice catch by Thielen.
It was. So, you know, it wasn't anything scheme-wise. They just made some plays right there. But it did get us on our heels a little bit. And that's what you talked about. It was short, intermediate-type passing game. With that, they took some shots, and it paid dividends for him.
He's got a talented arm.
Oh, he's always been very good. A good decision maker. You know, they're excited about him being able to get him. He does a good job. I think his biggest dilemma was just the offensive line. They're trying to figure out what they can count on the offensive line. What could they give him? It was never about his talent and what he could do. It was about the protection he could get.
Trusting the guys up front.
That's,
I mean,
right.
They basically were playing in that game. Out of their five starting offensive linemen, three of them were backups. They ended up losing Fusco during that game, so they had four backups in there. You guys weren't able to get a sack. You know, I'm sure Ngakoue was asking after the game, somebody probably asked, and said, you know, hey, does that go down as a sack? Because he stripped Sam Bradford, but Bradford was able to pick it up and throw it. That does not go down as a sack, but I'm sure that was an area that you guys wanted to be able to accumulate some numbers because some teams had against Sam Bradford.
Right, and we knew that they were going to get rid of it quick. They did take a couple shots, and that's why we blitzed on a few more times. But I thought Malik had a pretty good game as far as getting pressure on him.
Mm-hmm.
He got some hits on him, was close a couple times, so had some disruptions, but just didn't finish it off with sacks.
While we're on the explosive plays, and I didn't know this until I got the stat handed to me this week, you know, because it was a game in which you guys gave up explosive plays. So you're like, okay, well, how are you guys doing defensively at allowing explosive plays? You guys are actually tied with the Broncos in the National Football League for the fewest explosive plays. And for those that don't know, an explosive play in a running game is 12 yards or more. This is what the league considers. An explosive play in the passing game is 16 yards or more, and you guys are tied with the Broncos with the fewest in the National Football League with 67.
Yeah, you know, a huge jump from last year. And that was one of the things that we thought that, you know, with the addition of some draft picks and free agents, along with our guys that are in-house that have been doing well, we just felt like, hey, that was an area that we need to tighten down. And our coverage is paying dividends for us. And to cut the number of explosive plays down, I think we were in the high 120s at the end of the year last year. We knew it was an area that we needed to improve on. So that's awesome to see a defense make that kind of jump in explosive plays, because obviously it's a big part of the game.
The goal line stands. Love seeing goal line stands. You ended up getting the one takeaway where it was Cyprian, and I believe he's not getting credit for it, but Jared Wilson got his hand in there as well, the one that Malik recovered. The other one where you guys had them turn the ball over on down, Senderek makes a fantastic play. Great awareness on that play by Senderek, and going to show that on Jaguars.com film room Friday, because you could see right before the snap, he actually changes his stance from a power position to a speed position, because I think he realized the guard was leaving and he was going to get penetration.
Well, you know what? We talk about give us an inch and we'll protect it. It's that type of mentality. When you're on the goal line, hey, if there's an inch, you do everything you can to keep him out of the end zone. We made some great plays down there. And also a take-a-shot type of mentality. Not with our coverage principles. We got to stay on that. But with the defensive line, and that's a great example, Sendarik Marks taking a shot and making a play.
Boy, taking a shot, Avery Jones. I got to bring him up because he had a couple plays on the other goal line stand that led to the fumble, you know, the plays prior to that. He was outstanding.
He does. You know, it starts up front, you know, with the penetration. But, you know, and Avery did a good job there. But a guy like Hayes Pollard, I mean, I think out of the six plays, he was involved in five of them. Mm-hmm. So here's a guy that really was his role, to be in the goal line package, took ownership of it, and it really paid dividends for us in those two particular series.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk with the head coach about some Texans and Battle Red Sunday in Houston coming up. We'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And this segment is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. All right, Gus, we had this conversation earlier in the week, and let's have it again for the listener, because you know you guys are top five now in the National Football League on defense, number five overall, and for those that don't know, that is yards allowed per game or yards allowed for the season, and they calculate basically per game in case teams have a bye and haven't played the same number of games. Number four against the pass, and if you could pick one category besides or as a defensive category, what category would you take to be number one?
Points.
Right?
We all
points.
Would, you know, defensively. And that's where I think you take a look at. Sometimes defensive points is very accurate. Sometimes it's not. It counts everything. If there's special teams touchdowns, if there's a pick six, that goes on to the defensive point. So when you look at it, sometimes it can get skewed by that. But every team puts that into the equation. So you have to look at kind of the whole picture, but obviously if it's clean and everything is the same and, defensively, you want to, have the lowest amount of points, as the top figure in your stats, and you're doing pretty well if you can do that.
I remember going back to college at UVA. We used to have team goals, and it was, up on a grease board, chalkboard probably back then. And it was different categories and goals. They had offensive goals, defensive goals. And I remember the one that we always cared about the most, and that was points. And I want to say that our goal was always 17 points or less. Is that kind of still the mindset?
Yeah, and that's how it was in Tampa Bay when I was there with Monty Kiffin. Back in 2006, it was 17 points. And I believe in 2002 when they won the Super Bowl, that was the number they came up with. Figuring that if you get anything over 17 points, defense should win the game and allow the team to win. But it's changed. I mean, it's such a high, powerful NFL league now offensively.
That's why I was curious to ask.
I'm sure the points has come up. We still say 17. That's the mark that we're shooting for. But obviously, anything lower than that is especially when you have a game. I feel like when you watch these games, it'd be an interesting stat. You're seeing a lot of points scored in the second half. You know, you're seeing these low points being, you know, 9-9 our game, and then you're seeing the game finish off where it's, you know, in the 20s. You know, so it's you really got to take advantage of your opportunities in the second half because you know the offense is going to do it.
Mm. Interesting. All right, Houston Texans in Houston this Sunday. Texans have declared Sunday Battle Red Day. Is that the NFL version of a homecoming? I don't know. But they have like one every year, and I guess they wear their red jerseys, and fans wear red jerseys. But boy, they had a heck of a game last week. They ended up playing the Indianapolis Colts in Indianapolis, and they ended up winning that game 22-17 in a game in which they affected Andrew Luck and took the ball away from him three times. They played good football.
I do think they did that. They did a good job running the ball. They didn't throw the ball a lot. But, you know, when they did, they did some good things with it. But then they really relied on their defense. And their defense made some critical plays at critical times. Sack caused fumble, got some turnovers, and it allowed them to win the game. So, you know, going in that game, they needed that. They needed to have a win on the road at Indy. And, you know, I think it really rejuvenated them and gave them some energy back for these last couple games going to this playoff run. And thus, you know, you got a big game for them and for us on Sunday.
Well, they're tied. The Titans are also at 7-6. But the Texans, 4-0 in the division. They've won 9 consecutive division games, which is a huge accomplishment. The Titans are actually only 1-3 in the division. But, boy, to be able to say that you've won 9 consecutive games, you've talked about it. The goal is always to own the division. Right now they're owning it.
Yeah, you know, they've done a good job. You know, Indy was that team for a while. Now Houston's doing it. So, you know, what we look at is in this fourth quarter of our season, we have 3 games against divisional opponents. And we got to take it one by one. But it starts with Houston. But we can do some good things these last 3 games for us and for where we want to head into the offseason.
There's no secret to the Texans' success, is there? Run the ball. Play good defense.
Yeah, run the ball, play good defense, limit the turnovers, and get turnovers. And if you can do those things, you got a great opportunity. Their defense is doing a good job as far as points. They're going up against some very good offenses, and they're limiting these offenses to the number of points they're scoring. Anytime you can do that, you're always in the game. And then it's just about making big plays and forcing the team to make some critical errors. And that's what happened in the Indy game.
All right, well, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about that Texans offense and some of the weapons that they have, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show, where we roll along here talking about the Houston Texans. And, Gus, we talk about their running game, and they've got some weapons. Lamar Miller, Alfred Blue, Jonathan Grimes. And the amazing thing is the lowest yards per carry out of all those guys is Lamar Miller, who is their bell cow, and he's at 4.1 yards. Alfred Blue at 4.7, Jonathan Grimes at 6.1. A pretty good group.
It is. You know, anytime you're averaging over 4 yards a carry, that's a good sign. I mean, it catches a defensive coordinator's eye. And, you know, it's surely when you watch the tape, you see it. It's that commitment to the run game. I think that, you know that that's what they wanted to do. I think they're trying to figure out how's their quarterback, Osweiler, play into this mix. But they came back to it, and they just said, you know what, we're going to win games by running the ball. And at this time of the year, with some of the games you have played, you've got to be able to establish that running game. And they're committed to it.
When you say you got to factor in the quarterback, I mean, to be real, I mean, Brock Osweiler's not playing at a high level. I mean, his rating's a 73.4. It's very apparent from some of the play calling that they're trying to, I don't want to say protect him, but not put too much on him because it appears that he's not ready to do that.
Well, I think they're just trying to utilize their strengths. They know what works for them. They know that they have a good offensive line. They've got a good set of backs, and they're going to try to get them the ball as much as possible. Now, they got this receiver, a couple of receivers out in the perimeter that are very talented as well. But I think they're understanding their role. They know it's going to be more big play types of plays that they're going to make. They're going to call their number in critical times once they get in the red zone or third down situation. So, you know, they're picking and choosing how to utilize their weapons.
They've got this receiver. His name is DeAndre Hopkins, and Jalen Ramsey followed him everywhere. Some numbers on DeAndre Hopkins. You know, this is an organization franchise that had Andre Johnson, who's got Hall of Fame caliber numbers. And right now DeAndre Hopkins has more yards and touchdowns in his first 4 seasons, and that season's not even done yet. He has more than DeAndre Hopkins. That's impressive.
Yeah, you know what? He's a guy that you have to be aware of where he is on the field. Now, you're right. We didn't match Jalen up with him, and that's something that we're considering. Obviously, there's different situations that come up where we might change that up, but he should have plenty of opportunities on him. Now, you know, even though he had, what, 5 receptions, I think he had double-digit targets in our game. So they want to try to get him the ball, but they also have Will, you know, on the perimeter too, who's got great speed. And he's a guy that they'll take some shots. I'm sure after they saw Minnesota with a couple 40-yard explosive plays, they know that could be important too, just to, you know, give him an even better field position.
Well, you say that we might put Jalen Ramsey on DeAndre Hopkins. Gus, I got my popcorn ready. I'm kind of anticipating that. You want to have your best player against their best player, and that's certainly it. And the amazing thing is last year Hopkins – obviously a different quarterback. Last year he had 111 catches, over 1,500 yards, and 11 touchdowns. And this year the numbers aren't nearly there. Obviously the way that, you know, like you say, they're going to play to their strength. He is a strength, but the quarterback isn't quite a strength yet, so his numbers are a little bit off. But even when you have a guy like that who may not be getting the targets and the attention – you still got to pay attention to a guy like that.
Right, because all it takes is one play. So you see some teams that are playing some split safety coverage where they're looking to double him and try to take away some of his route concepts, especially on third down. But, you know, you can win games in many different ways. And Houston right now is trying to find a way to win some games consistently, and they're feeling like the run game is the way to do it for them. And, but it's not like we're not going to see the pass. We're going to get challenged multiple times in that. We just got to be able to stand up in those situations.
DeAndre Hopkins, only one 100-yard receiving game this year. That was week 2 against Kansas City, but he's still a dynamic player. But one of the position groups that is having an unbelievable year for the Houston Texans, and that's the tight ends. I know that C.J. Fedorowicz is on the injury report with a concussion, so he's a bit of a question mark this year, but there's no questioning how much the tight ends have been involved for the Houston Texans this year alone in the passing game. Combined, those tight ends have 98 catches for 938 yards. That's pretty high.
Well, you know what? And they have different varieties. You know, you talked about C.J., you know, more of that Y type, and then Ryan Griffin, and then, you know, they have Anderson, who's almost like a converted wide receiver type body. But they all have different skill sets. But CJ's the one that's really catches your attention. He's a good inline blocker, does a great job out in space, and, you know, a big target for Brock to throw to.
Well, and the last time that they faced you guys, they did exactly kind of what their formula is, run the football, play good defense. They ended up having, like, I think 181 yards rushing. They only had 92 net yards passing. You'd like to be able to have those type of numbers maybe in total, but maybe distributed a little bit differently.
Right. You know, the 181 yards rushing, they had some big explosive plays, explosive runs in that. And, you know, that's just where we got to make plays, you know, in the running game. I thought we did a pretty good job except for those plays. But those plays are part of it. And, you know, they had some turnovers, pick six. They had some special teams, you know, a good return there. So we have to clean up that part of it. Every game's different. Every game, even though it's a division opponent. We saw that last year with our Tennessee game. We played them at home. It was a close game. We go to Tennessee, and it was a big scoring game. So you never know what you're getting into. You got to prepare for both sides, really what could happen. But, you know, you go with your game plan. You want to go in there and play fast.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk a little Texans defense right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Logman alongside the head coach and Gus, the Texans defense, number 6 in the National Football League. They had one heck of a game against the Indianapolis Colts. I was shocked that Frank Gore only carried the ball 10 times in that game, and Andrew Luck ended up throwing the ball 45 times. And Andrew Luck ended up turning the ball over 3 times. There was 2 interceptions. The safeties for the Texans, Howell and Demps, ended up getting them. And then Jadeveon Clowney had a huge play to where the Colts were driving. I want to say it was around the 3 or the 4 yard line. And the Texans were up 16-10. The Colts could take the lead. Jadeveon Clowney gets a single block against Dwayne Allen, the tight end. And he goes around the corner and got his first career sack cause fumble.
Well, you know what? That's what happens. Here it is, like you said, 16-10 and going in to score, and how quickly, how fast the game can change with one big play. And, you know, that's what those types of players can do. They can change the outcome of the game. He's got that capabilities. You have to have great awareness where he's at. And to put a tight end on him at times, you know, depending on the scheme and what you're trying to get accomplished, but it's a tall order. It's not that it can't be done. It's not that it won't be done in the future. You got to have times where you got to have that matchup. But they took advantage of that one.
I was shocked. I mean, that was his first career sack caused fumble. You know, Unique Ngakoue had four sacks in four consecutive games, and I think every one of them had a caused fumble with it. So I was surprised to read that was his first sack caused fumble.
Well, everybody develops, or it kind of comes to him at different stages. Look at a guy like Marquise Lee. Took him a couple of years, and then he finally got in a groove. You know, Clowney's very similar. It just took him a little bit of time, but you're starting to see him in that groove. I know I talked to him after the game just briefly, and you could just tell that he was playing with a lot of confidence. He was a very confident man, and when you have some success on the field, it can breed that.
Clowney leads the Texans with 12 tackles for a loss, impressive number. The guy on the other side, Whitney Mercilus, leads the team with 5.5 sacks and 19 quarterback hits. He's a heck of a football player, and he's a challenge to block as well.
It is. When you have two guys like that, and just their awareness of where they're at, and they'll try to move them around to get them match up. So they'll match them up on the inside. They'll match them up on the outside. A lot of times when they're outside rushers, you say, okay, we're going to slide the protection. We're going to chip. We're going to do some different things to help out. But when they move a guy around like that and they're looking for matchups, that's one of the advantages of having a guy like Whitney.
All right, I like those two guys, but I've got another favorite on their defense. Bernardrick McKinney, second-year player out of Mississippi State. I want to say he was a second-round pick for him last year. There was some talk that he could have been a first-round pick out of Mississippi State. Didn't end up happening. But watching the way that he plays the game, he's got the build – of an outside backer, and there were many that were forecasting him to be an outside linebacker in the National Football League, but for the Texans, he's an inside backer, and he's long, but it's not like he plays the game like he's too tall.
Right.
He plays at a high level.
He does. You know what? I know when he was coming out, a lot of people were comparing him to more like a Brian Urlacher. You know, that size, that frame, operates in space pretty well. And a guy like Brian Urlacher, what made him so effective was in his pass drops, too. Not just his run game and his physical nature, but he can cover a lot of space. All of a sudden that zone area where you go in the innermost part of your zone, the outermost part of your zone, when you got wingspan like that, it really condenses it. So that's the same thing with McKinney. You know, he's got that ability to do very well on his feet. He can cover a lot of area in his zone coverage, and then he can hit. You know, he's a very powerful man.
Yeah, I like him. He's fun to watch just because he can do so many different things. He actually does a good job in blitzing, coverage, run game, does it all for the Houston Texans. On the outside, I know that Jonathan Joseph did not play in the Colts game, the 11-year corner. He's had a great career, still playing very well. On the other side, Kareem Jackson, he was one that had the interception for a touchdown against you guys November 13th. He's a good player. These two guys, are they the reason why they can do some of the things they do on defense because they're pretty good
It's not just those two guys now. They've got some other talented guys.
A.J. Boye.
Yeah.
Got to mention him.
He's playing very well. And we did not see him our first game, but he's a guy that really stands out when you're watching tape. So they are. They're very talented in the back end. They're guys that really rely on that front to provide pressure. And you see him take some chances, calculated chances. They know the ball's got to come out fairly quick, and it gives them some opportunities to be really greedy. And they're taking advantage of those times.
Yeah, I'm glad you kind of just said, whoa, there's another guy back there, because that Boye, he can play.
Yeah.
I remember leading up to the game in November, and he was questionable going into the game. I was going, I want to see the injury report, because he makes that big of a difference for them.
He is. You know what? And it just allows other guys to play different positions as well for him, in nickel, dime situations as well. So very talented in the back end. They got a number of first-round draft picks on this defense. And it's one thing to have guys like that, but they're playing at that level as well.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We come back, we'll talk more about the Houston Texans, including defensive coordinator Romeo Crennel, and we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Well- Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And Jeff Logman alongside the head coach and Gus. Defensive coordinator Romeo Crennel has been around the block a long time. He's got the ability to play a lot of different ways on defense with, you know, the talent. He's got some talent in the back end. But I think the one thing for me, just, you know, I'm inexperienced eye watching, they move around a lot, and he does a really good job of trying to disguise who is going to be coming because he's got some talented linebackers. You know, he's got Cushing, he's got McKinney. John Simon I would even put into that mix, and he's got Merciless Whitney and Jadeveon Clowney. Sometimes you don't know who's coming.
Right. And, you know, like we said, they're very talented on the defensive side. First and second down, you can anticipate what you're getting. You know, they play a lot of man. They'll play some quarters, you know, out of their front. But then third down, that's when you see them start getting creative, unconventional as far as who they're bringing, some different looks in there. That's where it becomes even more challenging on third down. It's going to be very important that we're in manageable third down situations.
All right, the injury report obviously has a lot to do with some of the things that you guys are going to be able to do on offense and defense. And I was looking at it today. Looks like some good news. Chris Ivory, Brandon Linder, both are limited. Can that be viewed as a positive maybe going forward?
Yeah, it can be viewed as a positive. It's going to be day-to-day, though, with those guys, and we'll see how they, you know, come back tomorrow. You know, like Chris Ivory was off to the side. He got a few more, you know, shots today. But we'll see. We want to be smart with him. You know, that's the type of injury that if you're not smart can come back and be really long. So we're trying to be smart, but we'll see how he comes back tomorrow.
A couple guys that one guy in particular, Chris Reed, did not practice toe, did not practice yesterday, did not practice today. And I know that in your press conference you talked about maybe Jeremiah Potassi possibly playing. What's going on with Reed?
Well, you know, he ended up, you know, we'll see more from the doctors and trainers, but he just had a situation with his toe. He should be okay as far as long term. I know it's something that they're just keeping an eye on, and you know, we'll just take it from there.
And looking at the Houston Texans, for them, their starting right guard, Jeff Allen, did not practice, concussion. And then also their tight end, C.J. Fedorowicz, concussion, did not practice. How do you guys follow the injury report? I mean, when it comes out, you're like, this is, you know, breaking news. You got to get a look at it.
Right. You take a look at the sheet that you're looking at right now, but you know that it can change. You know, there's some guys in there that are limited, and then you find out on Sunday they're not playing or you know, they don't practice much. You know, we've had that situation. Guys don't practice much the whole week, and they're playing on Sunday. So I think it gives you an idea where guys are. Once you see them full, you can anticipate pretty much that they're going to be ready to go. You know, but, you know, yeah, we definitely wait till the handout comes out just to see, because it does. It affects our personnel, affects their personnel, what they're going to be playing with.
The end of the year, I mean, realities are you're 2-11, so do you approach certain guys maybe more cautiously given the circumstance? Look, for example, a Brandon Linder, your best offensive lineman, in my opinion, and, you know, the concern about, look, you know, we want to make sure that he doesn't have an issue going into the offseason. Is that brought into the factors of making calls on guys at this point of the year?
No, I don't think, you know, we're going to always do what we feel is best for the individual and then best for the team. And these guys, I mean, Brandon Linder wants badly to play. You know, it's going to be where the trainers are going to have to tell him, no, you're done, or you can't play in this game. So, you know, that's what I told you before. I think I mentioned this team is special in that way. They want to get out there. They want to get this done. So their mindset is all about getting whatever they can do to get ready to play on Sunday, healthy Sunday. Obviously, practice is everything to us. It's very important. But, you know, we also got to take an effect that is that going to hinder their opportunity to play on Sunday.
All right, well, let's take a break. One more segment after this right here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll be talking how the alumni weekend went. I saw you mingling with all the guys, 60-something guys, you know. It was good to see you out there with the guys.
No, it was. You know what? In that short area, we went together for about an hour.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see all the guys there. And, you know, I heard a lot of stories, Lars.
Oh, no, those stories didn't involve me. Well, we'll talk about those stories right after this right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Lagerman alongside the head coach in Gus Alumni Weekend. Great to see you, and great thank you for coming and spending the time with some of the alumni guys. I know they greatly appreciate it. I couldn't believe, though, the stories that I started to hear about it the next morning about Baselli and Leon Searcy, you know, having their old glory days relived out and about in town after that night.
Is that right?
I mean, you would think that these guys in their mid-40s now would show a little self-control,
right,
and not hit the bars.
You know what? I was really excited about it. You know, I thought I was going to go get a chance to meet a lot of guys, but Tony kind of cornered me and told me about his stories again. So,
all right. Yeah, so. Thank you, Gus. Hey, by the way, the Bison, congrats. They avenged the South Dakota State loss, beat them in the Dome in Fargo, and they've got James Madison, 6 p.m. in Fargo this Saturday. Good luck to the Bison.
All right. Thank you.